You're listening to Go Fish with Mike Buck on AM 690, The Fishing Answer. This segment is being brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council at wpcouncil.org. Now, troll on in.
Well, you know, sometimes we don't actually I don't know why we did that. We made it trolling. It's not all about trolling. It's about the entire fishery. And as you know, for the last several years, we've been so excited to have this wonderful partnership with the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council as a sustaining sponsor of our program. One of the things that I learned day one was that the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council, as many in the country, are what they call a bottoms-up organization. That means that they try to promote from within. They recruit in the area. There's all kinds of eclectic people and opportunities to participate. And remember that all of this collaboration goes to setting the bar for what we expect out of the fishery, what we can take out of the fishery, what laws and rules there ought to be in the fishery. And all of this stuff is not done without the able help of what they call an advisory panel. Sounds cool, huh? I want to be on an advisory panel. Josh DeMello, fishery analyst for the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council, is with us again. And Josh, I know that really kind of highlights and emphasizes what we do talk about, the bottoms-up part of it. In other words, an advisory panel must get convened in almost every area of what you do. What started that whole thing?
Well, an advisory panel is actually mandated by the Magnuson-Stevens Act.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So back in 1976, they had the foresight in Congress to create these groups that would advise the council. So it's not just the council's making decisions just from what they know or what the staff gives them.
I think that's exciting from a standpoint that they recognize early in the piece, if you want to sell us fishermen on something, you better have us fishermen around in either fighting for our rights or agreeing or inputting.
And that's one of the things that we keep hearing every time we go out is that fishermen want to be a part of the process. Mm. And so the advisory panels are part of the council process and where fishermen can be involved from the very beginning.
Now, I'm going to guess, and we'll go through this as we talk about these panels, that each different part of the fishery might have a different advisory panel. Obviously, you know, an offshore guy or a bottom fisherman and a guy catching opi in the stream, different guys.
We started it that way. When our advisory panel started off, it was really an advisory panel for each of our fishery management plans. So we had one for bottom fish and seamount groundfish, one for pelagics, and one for that started off for lobsters and ended becoming a broader ecosystem and habitat panel.
Which to me is really interesting because another thing that I get asked all the time and some of the things that are frankly exciting to people are when they find out that there's a much better sense of collaboration and cooperation between where the city and county or the state land is or water is and then where the council picks up from a limit. We talk about how far that is. We got to remind everybody. And we also want to remember, tell people that while there can be clear-cut areas of grids or the fish don't know that, right? They're swimming from one to the they don't know if they're in the state water. They're just in the water.
Right. And so the state territorial waters go out to 3 miles.
3 miles.
In our region. And then outside from 3 to 200 is the federal waters. Mm-hmm. And so 0 to 200 is the actual exclusive economic zone or EEZ. And then you can't tell a fish not to bite your hook because the fish is a state fish or federal fish.
What I found out is interesting about that, and you can say how it is changed or osmosed since you've been there. Because what you said is very true in the beginning. I emphasize this all the time. Many of you know you fisher folks that are members of the council or part of the council or part of the fishery or just a listener to the show. Every time there is, whenever possible, a fisher's forum, I'm able to be part of a panel or moderator or anything. And I have actually seen, I don't want to say a paradigm shift, but a shift in the willingness of stakeholders, particularly in community management-based areas, how they are being way more cooperative and communicated with the council than they were maybe when they thought it was Big Brother looking over them.
I think that fishermen have seen that they're even more important than some of the scientists that are out there because they're actually on the water and they see these changes going on. So that they know that they have to participate because once they participate, they see the differences. And a good example of that is bottom fish, where the stock assessment that first came out wasn't very friendly towards fishermen.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And after the fishermen told them, hey, this happens, and they participated in cooperative research, and all of a sudden the stock assessment is well informed and they're actually benefiting from it.
You know, and let's harken back. Last week, gang, you may remember, we had PhD Dr. Ben Richards here, and he was the biology of the fishery biologist for NOAA. And he pointed that same thing out. We talked about not just the technology improvements where you can do the stock assessments, but the fact that they go out and they get some guys on a pretty level playing field and go out and make them catch fish.
Right.
Which is really exciting. I mean, wow, this is like hands-on.
And for the advisors, it all started with our advisors, people on our advisory panel that were fishermen and were really concerned and really interested in the issues of bottom fish. And so that's that. And then it grew out of that, and they brought in their friends and other fishermen.
Right. So. But what I love about that, and there's specific guys, you've heard me talk with Ed Watamura, Uncle Roy Morimoto, and many, many others. It seems to me that what we have here is these guys didn't realize that they were getting another full-time job.
Basically.
But we
appreciate that a lot of these folks are willing to spend all that time, you know, after their job, sometimes even skipping going out fishing because they care so much about these issues.
Yeah, Roy Morioka, not Moriwaki. But the interesting thing about that was when Dr. Richards said, you know, these guys we pay them to do this because it really does crimp them sometimes. And every now and again, when their species is biting, they want to be out catching fish, but they got to go to certain places. Isn't it sort of interesting the way the thought of the bottom fishery has changed based on these advisors and their studies?
Oh, it's been amazing. I started back in 2002, and it was really the advisors were really pushing to get a better handle on their fishery. And then things happened where they said there was overfishing, and even though there really wasn't, and we had to put in a quota system and everything. And then it started clicking with all these guys, seeing things that have been happening in Alaska with their quotas and on the East Coast, and realizing that that's the way our fisheries are moving if we don't get a handle on it.
Well, you know, I've seen some national stuff by Saving Seafood and other guys like that that talk about how fishing in America is sustainable. I mean, basically, even the stakeholders in the commercial end of things, they know that they can't catch them all because then they'll be out of a job. So they got to work out a way. And that's why I'm thinking some of the input that you get from these advisory panels, really, I don't want to say they soften the blow about regulations, but they make them more realistic.
And there's a lot of things going on. I was watching Shark Week the other night. They're talking about all the shark fisheries in Florida and how Florida is the home of shark finning, but maybe it's sustainable. And there's all these different pressures coming from outside that don't know what's going on. And so the advisory panel provides that first line of communication back to the public and to the councils about what's really going on out there.
You know, it's sort of interesting. Those of you that read Hawaii Boats and Yachts, my column is is devoted this month to that Shark Week. And I used to say it was every time the Nat Geo Channel or Discovery Channel wanted ratings, they put on Shark Week because it gets our attention, right? And the iconic movie Jaws, nobody ever thought it was going to be a standard that got played over and over again. But you're right. We have this fascination about them. And that's what makes, when you talk about shark bites, we kill a lot more sharks than sharks kill us. I mean, and I didn't realize until I saw that how many species of sharks there were.
Oh, I love it. I love Jaws, and I love Shark Week. And I like the fact that they're exposing the science of tagging and that kind of stuff to the world. But sometimes I wish there was something about the fishing, because it's not all doom and gloom, and it's not all rape and pillage the oceans and killing sharks, throwing them back alive.
They actually have a shark fishing ventures on the West Coast that is perfectly sport and released. And happily released, the Makos and others. But I think that what a lot of people, maybe rightfully so, this is straying a little bit off the bat, but I've talked to people before that have been flying in places around the Philippines and in the Orient and some of the Pacific, where they see on rooftops shark fins being dried. You know, there is a huge demand for that. It's amazing that there are any of them left.
It's in the U.S., the fisheries in the U.S. are so well managed. Mm. Doesn't matter which fishery, if it's overfished, overfishing, there's management going on. It's so well managed that we are the example to the rest of the world. It's just how do we ask our neighbors in China and the Philippines, who have millions and millions and millions, hundreds of millions of people there that they have to feed and they have to provide protein to these folks. How do we ask them, oh, don't go fishing?
Very good point, because sometimes those people can't see past their nose. They have a demand that they can't supply. I mean, no matter what they do, there's still more demand. And they make more babies than they lose people. So, I mean, it's growing exponentially. So unless, and one of the things that somebody always says, and I know that we don't touch upon this too much at the council or even on my show for that matter, is that aquaculture is actually kind of mandatory in some parts of the world, whether or not it's the same protein and that's not up for argument. But maybe that will take some of the pressure off the wild fish stocks.
And that's the hope of what the United States wants to do. Mm-hmm. They're really pushing aquaculture right now in NOAA and Department of Commerce. They really want aquaculture to take off. Some of the problems is that it's space limited. Mm-hmm. There's only certain places where you can do aquaculture because the currents, or it's too deep, or it's too far from harbors, that kind of stuff, if you're doing it in the ocean anyway. So that's why you have a lot of these close systems together in places like Southeast Asia, even in Canada, where that's why they always talk about the salmon.
The farm salmon.
Farming. And some places just can't handle that nutrient load. So you really have to think about it before you just start pushing it on
these areas. So what we're talking about here a little bit, we've strayed away, these advisory panel and their members, and kind of maybe how it's done. For instance, here in Hawaii, the advisory panel is comprised mostly of about how many members?
So this year we're actually reducing the number of members, and previously we've had 12 members per advisory panel. So as I mentioned before, we started with the fishery management plan type of advisory panels. We've kind of moved it away from that later on into more broader ideas, and now we're basing those advisory panels on our fishery ecosystem plans, which are place-based. So we have one for American Samoa, we have one for the Marianas, we have one for Hawaii and the Pacific Remote Island areas, and then one for pelagics.
When the decision is made, say, about Samoa, they're certainly drawing from the advisory panel member from that area. But aren't there also mirror-like responses that they would get from other members of the panel, even not from that area?
We would hope so. And I think each advisory panel would support the other advisory panels in what they wanted to do. I'm sure they wouldn't speak out against it unless it was really bad for them too.
I think if they're honest with each other, and you're likely to find brothers among brothers telling it a little bit more like it is, particularly if you're in Samoa and I'm in CNMI or I'm on the main Hawaiian Islands, we're certainly not competitors, but we certainly have mutual experiences.
And I think they learn from each other and they take lessons learned and go back home and try and implement it. One example is we had a meeting last year, and we were talking about fishing tournaments at one point, and one of the guys from Hilo was talking about how Hilo Trollers has their fishing tournament, and then they have a marine debris category. So whoever brings in the most trash that they pick up on the ocean.
It's lovely.
And the guys in CNMI, the light bulb just went off in their head. So that year, they started putting in a marine debris category. Yeah. So, and they're getting people to sponsor it, and they got the awards and everything. And
let's say you were a junk fisherman, but you had a big boat. You know where the rubbish is. Just go get the rubbish and win that award. But I think one of the things that I saw proven, and I was talking to, I can't remember whether it was Freddie. I can't remember who it was. One of the guys up in Kona. Talking about that fishermen nowadays in that neck of the woods bring more in than they take out. It used to be, you know, you finish the sandwich, you throw the bag. Now it's like you finish the sandwich, you have a bag. And by the way, you see another bag, you scoop net it. And that is something that, it doesn't it sort of change the mindset of the fisherman about waste and about only catching what he needs and sharing and all that stuff, we think?
We would hope so. And it really has changed. More people are more environmentally conscious now and realize that we can't keep doing that kind of stuff. And I think the advisory panel is starting to be that voice to help other fishermen and their community get involved.
You mentioned a while ago, at any given time, is it one panel per location, like here in the main islands?
Yes. So for Hawaii and all the other areas. We really narrowed it down to six, six advisors to talk about all the fisheries, spear fishing, bottom fish.
So that means the panel members are exchanging a lot between each other.
Right, yeah. Right. Because we've learned that the bigger panels, not everyone can be there, so we end up having a small panel anyway. Mm-hmm. So if we can get concentrate on those folks that can make it, then we'll have opportunities for alternates, and our meetings are always open to the public. So whoever's interested can always jump in in our calls or our meetings and provide some input.
Are we on the prowl? I mean, are we looking for some more?
Yes. So
hey, listen, gang, this might be your chance. I got more questions about what it takes in a minute.
So this year is the last year of the current four-year term. Mm-hmm. So in 2019, we're going to start a whole new advisory panel. And so right now we're looking for a few good fishermen and fishing enthusiasts that would like to get involved and be that link to the community.
I would be so pleased, my friend and listeners, male and female alike, young and old, that some of these new panel members comes out of my audience. And I think that maybe, obviously, you want to know a few more things about it, because it's a very, very important part of what the council does. And it is mandated by the Magnuson Act, as Josh DeMello, our fishery analyst, was saying. What sort of a commitment does somebody make when somebody is in agreement to be a panel advisory panel member? What are they in for?
So as an advisory panel member, you'd be committing to a four-year term, and we really only meet before council meetings, so that's three times a year.
Right.
And sometimes we'll bring you in for other meetings, but we ask that you be available at least once a month to call in. We have some informal calls that we just want to talk and see what's going on.
I bet you've really sharpened up what you can do telephonically with these members.
And through web conferencing. Yeah, so if you have that ability,
better. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And so with advisors, we don't only just want to bring them into meetings, get what they know, and then send them back out. What we want to do is provide that constant communication so that when things are going on in the community, they feel they have someone to talk to.
That's what I was getting at. So it's not just come in and shoot from memory. I'm anticipating that prior to a meeting that you're going to send out, some stuff saying, hey, this is what's coming up. We value your opinion. These are some of the things we're going to be looking at. Can you do your research and bring us your mano?
Exactly. And so some of the issues that that come up from the community that they bring to the council, we try and work with advisory panel members to find out how they, as the advisory panel members, can come up with a solution or who they should be talking to. Yeah. And our advisors go and talk to the state. They go talk to the feds. They go talk to the Coast Guard.
Yeah, I like it, by the way. They talk to the fishermen. And I think even somebody that's set in their ways, if they see enough evidence to support another thing, oh, man, I've been wrong about that. I'm changing my mind.
And we really appreciate all the work that our advisors have done up to now. And we really hope that we can expand on that and we can have a better working relationship or working process so that when things do come up, our advisors are the first ones on the scene, and they're the ones that the community goes to and goes, hey, I heard this thing going on.
That's another thing. One of the things that we've been talking about back and forth a lot, not just on the bottom fishing stock assessments and everything else, but being simpatico with the way certain parts of the fishery, whether it be in the main Hawaiian Islands, which I'm talking about right now, with community-based management. A lot of that shouldn't be taken as, okay, it's going to prevent everybody from fishing over there because they manage their own community base. But it does have some, I mean, doesn't an advisory panel really have some key thoughts in that area? Of not just what's been going on, not anecdotally, but, okay, before you guys start thinking that you can control this district, you got to understand that I might want to come here. My cousin might want to come here. So it's not we're not being excluding anybody, trying to include everybody.
So when those types of issues come up with the state, the advisors can meet and they can provide recommendations to the council, and the council can put its weight behind the recommendation and send it over to the state of Hawaii or whoever.
What I like about that is I've noticed that the state and others are also reaching out, and they might be reaching out to the same person. In other words, some of these advisory members are valuable in the rest of the community as well. So their expertise is kind of, that's why I'm saying, what sort of a commitment is somebody making to be there? Because obviously it's as much work as you'd like to make it, but there are opportunities, but it also, it won't overwhelm you.
And some people have gone on to be huge in the fisheries world as far as fishermen are concerned. I mean, we have guys like Roy Morioka that's gone through the advisory panel, and we have guys like Ed Ebisui and guys like even guys like William Isla, who's running for Oahu now. Yeah, I mean, he was an advisory panel member once upon a time.
Yeah, I can tell you all of these people he's talking about. Ed Ebisui, for example, a very successful attorney. He became president. I mean, it is an awesome way that these people with expertise, because he's a lawyer. And, you know, but he's a fisherman. So he actually brings a couple of different bucketfuls of information to a meeting. As do many of some of the other panel members that we've talked about before and not. Aren't you even amazed at how many different various things they do besides love the fishery?
Oh, they know how, they know everything that's going on. I mean, we have guys like that have moved on to the council and they've become the council chair. So the AP has become sort of the proving ground, the testing ground, or the farm system for the for future council members. And we hope that that continues, because because you're already involved in the issues and you have a background.
Okay, so like I said, if we can farm somebody into this advisory panel down the road from this program, I'd be really stoked. If somebody is interested, I mean, you know, I'm sure that, first of all, you can explain. They can go to wpcouncil.org, which we talk about all the time, and find out when the recruitment period is and what skill set or what things might be valuable to bring to the table.
So recruitment has started, and it's open until September 1st, because the council is going to have to make a decision in October. So you go online to wpcouncil.org, and you'll find the link to apply for the advisory panel. It's all done on a Google form. If you have trouble with that, you can call our office, 522-8220, and we can get you a printed copy if that's what you need.
I don't want to say that we're lurking for you, but we're kind of lurking for you, because it is interesting, and I don't know how many people have done multiple stints, but this is a four-year deal, and I know that somebody can pour their guts into 4 years and come back and do some more, but that the process also needs to be refreshed.
Right, and so there's some really good advisory panel members, and some that, you know,
not
that,
so good. Yeah, not again anything else.
But we always want new blood. We want to hear from everyone. We want to be representative of all the fisheries, the entire community. Really, you really just have to have an interest, and you have to be willing to do some of the work.
What I'm interested in is how the findings are, how the panel would get together and address an issue. I mean, if there's going to be a meeting, say, next month, and so here's the panel's meeting now, what they're going to bring, because isn't what they suggest key to what happens the following month during the council meeting?
Right. Yeah. So if there's an issue going on, say with bottom fish, it starts with the advisory panel. Yeah. They do a little research and figure out what the problem is and how the council can address it. And they'll make a recommendation to the council, and the council will take it up and say, oh, well, we didn't know this was a concern, and hey, we can do something, and whether it's telling the feds or telling the state, and it goes from there. And
sometimes, folks, you may be influenced to say, I don't want to participate, I don't want to share my secrets. But every now and again, when you do one of those things, it's amazing to me what long-range impact it has. That's why I'm encouraging you to take a look at this. And then the other thing would be, you know, at the end of any given day, it's still up to you to want to make that commitment. Has it been difficult in the past? I mean, I know that I'm hoping that there's a lot of people that want to do this. We've mentioned a few names over and over for decades. Isn't it sort of, we hope that there's some nice new young millennials that want to get into this thing and go forward?
I think that's always been the hope of some of the some of the folks, is to get some younger folks, some females on the advisory
Absolutely,
panel.
What
I was looking for is, you know, the longline industry is huge. Yeah. We should have at least one person from the longline industry that's on that panel, because that's where the issues are coming up.
And by the way, when we talk about the big issues, Josh and I were talking just before getting together to tape this episode. We're talking about monk seals. And it's true. You know, right now everybody's all fired up because there's a new monk seal pup. And, you know, I don't know how this happens, but instead of being on the Kaimana Beach, this one is on Kauai, with Rocky being the mom, number 11. And I know we were talking about it. There's been some suspicious deaths of these things. And I do know that sometimes a community-based management guy or an advisory panel guy or somebody knows what's going on and can bring it forward so that these inhumane or these criminal things don't go on.
And it's important that those folks are the link from the community to whoever they need to know. Because some of your listeners might know what's going on, but they don't know who to talk to.
Exactly.
The advisory panel members are the perfect people to go talk to. You don't want to go directly. You go talk to them, and maybe they can bring that forward.
That's why one of the pit stops along your evening's cruising the net should be wpcouncil.org. I actually moved it up to the top because I click on it all the time. I'm so surprised. And when we talked last week about the bottom fishery, the amount of stuff that you guys disseminate, I think it was Sylvia Spaulding was here a couple weeks ago, the stuff that you provide for teachers and for educators and for just family members and homeschoolers is amazing.
Oh, we have lots and lots and lots of material.
I mean, and it's stacking up. And thank goodness for the electronic way of meeting and the technology now that a lot of this doesn't have to be hard copy. You can print down set this. Hey, there's lesson plans. There's all kinds of stuff. Okay, I want to make sure, though, when we talk about the advisory panel, because the next show, we're working on actually me having an advisory panel member on and talking about when the rubber meets the road. How varied of a wide of a group are we looking for? You know, with regards to what part of the fishery are they from?
We're mainly looking for people that fish outside of 3 miles. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's nice to have shoreline guys, but we don't really have jurisdiction. We can make recommendations to the state, but that's about as far as it'll go. But we really want folks from the bottom fish, from longline, trolling, even the guys that go out blue water diving, and then across the islands. Yeah. We want people from each of the islands to apply as well.
And I'll tell you, there's a new way, and that's very good because that's very important. Particularly, I'm sure we've all been enamored, just fascinated by what's going on on the Big Island with the eruption and the sea life that's been affected already. And I remember when I was a kid, Kapoho was where I went tide pooling, and it's like gone, right?
And so, now Pohiki.
Yeah, I mean, now Pohiki. And by the way, we're taping this on Thursday, and when you hear this on Saturday, Pohiki might be gone. I mean, it's 500 feet away from it right now. But I think the incredible part of it is the willingness in which people share. The reason I already knew that it was going to be the 3 mile out guys. And there's also guys that from more and more opportunities, you mentioned it. There's a Wahine tournament coming up next week in Kona. There's the HIBT. We're finding more and more value in hooking up with the tournament guys to find out how many efforts were made, how many people were out fishing, what did they catch, what areas did they catch them in? Because they mostly have grids.
And it would be great to have charter fishermen as well. Yeah. We have Captain McGrew Rice is our vice chair right now for the overall advisory panel, and he's provided great insight to the charter community.
I think that what's happened, and there's a split opinion about that. We know right now that Kona, most of the Kona boats are in Tigran release now because they understand by doing that. So it was a matter of shifting the charter payers' mindset to, well, we're going to go catch a fish, we're going to take some great pictures, then we're going to let it go. You know, we're not going to throw a 400-pound marlin on the back of the truck unless it is deemed that, you know, it wasn't going to make it.
Well, that, and you don't have the United Fishing Agency there.
That's right.
And it's a little far to get it over to Suisan in Hilo.
Well, also there's other things, and that is, and I love it when we mention Uncle Roy Morioka, which we often do. He got together and helped once again the fishing tournament for the IHS, and where these local guys that. Homeless folks that maybe they haven't eaten fresh fish for a year and they got this fish. That is what you really enjoy it. But isn't that also, when you think about how many of these tournaments there are, the big, the Ahi Shootout in Waianae, certainly the Haleiwa, that's a hardcore tournament. Very valuable information can get learned from who caught what and how many boats went out.
And it's important to know that. Yeah. It's important to know how much effort they put into it. And I always think the least amount of information we need to know is who's going fishing. You have your account, you need to know how many checks you wrote.
Yeah, you know, that's really a good point. And not only that, but there's more and more people that are starting to understand. I think it's a number, Josh, that we've been talking about on this show for years with you guys. The number of people that are involved in the fishery, and I'm not talking about fishermen, and I'm not talking about, you know, boat repair guy. I'm talking about everybody, the guys that eat the fish, sell the fish, cook the fish in the restaurants. It's a lot more people than we think. It's like half the population of the state is somehow involved in the fishery.
And just our port alone is fifth in the nation.
Yeah.
But when you look at it, our numbers look really small compared to places like Alaska, Texas, Florida, Boston. But ours is, while it's small, it's a large part of our lives.
Sure.
Because we don't have the 10 million people. We have 1.4 million.
But it's also the cultural part of it. You know, when somebody says now is, okay, a potluck. Okay, who's going to bring the poke bowls? You know, or whatever seems to be on it right now. And I think that in that it is part of the culture. What you mentioned is, and I think it's the value of the catch that's here that's amazing. How much it is worth because of the condition that our fishermen keep it in.
Yeah, so it's a value, fifth in value. Because while we don't catch as much fish, we catch the really good fish that people want to buy.
Okay, so that means, once again, I want to wind this up. Next week, Josh is going to get us, we're working on it, one at least, maybe more, who knows, of these advisory panel members, just because I want to maybe salt the mine and let you folks decide if this is something you'd like to be involved in, or, and I think this is more likely to happen, there's plenty of people who listen to the show that maybe don't fish, but they know a fisherman, and they'll tell them, hey, I heard on the Go Fish show that this, you'd be a good person for that advisory panel. So, once again, repeat the requirements, if any.
Just got to love fishing and want to get involved with fishing. Yeah, and if you're out there and you know someone, it's a good opportunity. And the younger, older, male, female, it doesn't matter.
Let's get some of you Wahanis out there. That's why I said the Wahani tournament. And I think that poses a lot to it because how about the guy that just comes home from a big day fishing and he thinks his wife is no problem. He just throws the mai-mai in the counter. Here, cook it, you know? And wait a minute, they got to learn how to cut it, and they're getting pretty good. And there was that Wahini tournament a couple of weeks ago where they cut up a marlin on the back of the boat in like 10 minutes. The whole fish was cut up and divided. All Wahinis, they wanted to do it. So that's good. So once again, by the way, the recruitment window is now. They're starting to look now, and decisions are going to be made in September?
Yeah, it'll be made in October.
In October, okay.
At the council meeting.
Okay, at the meeting.
Right.
Yeah, so anyway, just bring it to the table. And what am I going to find at wpcouncil.org on this? Where can I learn some more?
Well, you can go to wpcouncil.org/2019-ap-application. It's a long one.
Yeah.
But if you go to just wpcouncil.org, click on the resources for fishermen, it'll be right there under the Mike Buck under Go Fish
and under the Go Fish. And if, by the way, if you're stressed about it, you're going to hear this. We'll have this program on there too. But in the meantime, just the MikeBuckShow@gmail.com, and I will make sure you get a blue line link so that you can do that. I think it's great, and I think that first of all, Josh, I'm sure you join me. I know you do in a big mahalo to the existing AP. I mean, these guys have been doing some really great stuff. Huh?
Right. Yeah. Thank you to everyone.
Okay. We'll be back again next week with another version. And by the way, we hope to have one of these AP guys or more joining us from maybe one of the neighbor islands or something. So you can see if you want to do this. So thanks for being a part of the program. Drop me a line, themikebuckshow@gmail.com. Themikebuckshow@gmail.com. Catch plenty of fish. Feed your family, feed your friends, and leave a little for me. I'm going out next time. Have a good one. See you next week.